You know what?
I think you're on.
I think that I should have called, or Darren should have called. That's why we didn't have... Yeah. Nicholas, are we on the air? We're on the air. All right, we'll let Grandfather finish here. I'm sorry, folks. All right, here we are. Thanks for joining us tonight, folks, on Sweet Liberty. And once again, it was my own fault for not calling and letting them know that I'm taking over. Is it Jackie Patru, your hostess tonight? Darren called me this afternoon. Had to go to work and ask if I would take the broadcast tonight. Evidently, Darren plays his own music, so we had no introduction. And so you are listening to Sweet Liberty. And today is Tuesday, the 4th of April, in the year 2006. And I know because I looked at the calendar before we came on air. And I'm glad that you're with us this evening. And, of course, our co-host, I guess we would refer to Alan Watt. We do almost every broadcast together now, is with us this evening. And I'm going to share our spiritual message with you. This is from A Course in Miracles. These were some cards that I found at my broadcast desk, which is where I'm not, because it's too doggone cold in there. And so I'm in the family room here and without broadcast equipment. But I guess you can hear, I found these cards that I had pulled and not put back in my box. And all of them were so cool. The one I wanted to share with you tonight is from the text, page 145. And it says simply that the Holy Spirit's voice is as loud as our willingness to listen. And maybe that Holy Spirit, maybe our higher self, whatever we would want to call it, we'll call it the Holy Spirit's voice, is as loud as our willingness to listen. And Alan, thank you for being here this evening. Alan?
Yes.
Oh, where are you? Do we have a delay going here?
No.
Oh, are you okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, I was just thinking when you said you have no music intro. And then I thought, well, you did. You had your Big Ben in the background there, the clocks.
Yes, we did, didn't we? And they probably knew it was us.
Yeah, it's significant of time, yeah.
Yes, yeah. It is. All right, well, say hello to our guests or our listeners this evening and let them know what your website is. I've got water boiling, and I want to go get my tea, okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you can catch me at Alan Watt. At cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and there are different programs and shows which you can download for free, audio shows and one video, and you can do it both on landline and on high speed. It takes longer on the landline. Some people have downloaded it on the landlines without any problems at all, and Jason, the webmaster, has made it pretty simple, which people like me really need, actually, in order to find out how to download the stuff. But it's up there. There'll be more added to it shortly, including some CDs which are coming out, a whole series of them. I also have three books for sale, which are called Cutting Through. And these books, 1, 2, and 3, go into the occult hidden societies behind rulerships and kingdoms and governments and so on down through the ages up until the present time, and I give you a lot of Masonic and high Masonic coding contained within them. And then the third one, I go into the monetary connection between the system we live in, which is called civilization. We've always had money at the beginning of what they call civilization, or the system, which basically dictates the way we live, how we live, who will live better than whom, and how wars are created and made and so on from thousands of years BC up until the present. It really hasn't changed in its structure. its intentions or its methodology. So you can order those books, and you'll see again the address on the website to order them from. And I don't know if Jackie's back yet or not.
I'm back.
I guess not.
I'm back.
You're back, eh?
Alan.
This is live radio.
Alan.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I think we've got a delay going on here or something.
Really?
Well, yeah, because you're not responding as quickly, and then I keep wondering if I've lost you.
Unless maybe the Secret Service is trying out a different computer that I'm going through first.
Right.
Yeah, so they can, yeah.
Right.
You never know.
Did you tell them, because I was in the kitchen and couldn't hear what you were saying, did you tell them about being on George Norrie?
No.
Well,
no, I was asked to go on the George Norrie show by the producer, and I've accepted. We'll see if it still goes ahead. If it does, it will be on the overnight of the 10th and the 11th of this month. And I don't know how long it's on for either. I don't know if it's an hour or more. And this happened after I was on the Rollie James show for 3 hours. So I guess the word got round, and we'll see how the next one goes. I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Well, I think that's phenomenal.
Hello?
It's
I guess Jackie's gone for her tea again. Well,
you're getting big time, Alan.
Wow, what was that?
What was
what?
Down
there?
Like glass?
It was like a... Yeah, it was a clashing
I thought that
electronic
was,
sound.
I thought that was at your place.
No.
I heard it.
It was a dee, 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 dee. Yeah.
It sounded like glass.
Well, I guess... No, to me it sounded like some sort of electronic pulsation or something.
Oh. Well, on the George Norrie thing, you've sent your books, right? They wanted books. You mailed the books to them?
Yeah.
Okay, well...
And
go ahead.
That'll give them an idea, I guess, of questions and things and to ask.
Well, we'll see once they read your books if they're going to bring you on.
Yeah, that's right. They might cancel and say, oh, no, this guy's too far out there.
Well, our listeners need to know that it's been scheduled, and you did say it overnight, the 10th, 11th of April, and you're on scheduled to be on 2 a.m. Eastern time, right, Alan?
I think it is, yeah.
Well, you said 11 Pacific, so that would be 2 a.m., and you're not sure.
Yeah.
So, folks, this is really amazing. The fact that he was on the Rollie James show for 3 hours, this is mainstream. There were either 5 or 6 a.m. stations and 6 FM stations, and the information is getting out, and I just think it's a miracle, Alan. I really do.
I was also on last week there. I got a sudden call to go back on the Edge show for half an hour because the guest hadn't turned up. So it's nice to see that these things are starting to happen now.
Yes, it is. And it is a possibility that you might wind up saying more than their handlers want you to say, but the beauty of this is that you're having the opportunity to get in front of so many people. And I think it's a miracle. To me, it's like a miracle.
Yeah. Well, it's been a long time coming. I mean, we started in 98 and just worked quietly and plodded on, you know.
Well, you'd be surprised, though, how many of our listeners have contacted me over the years. Lily mentioned this. She said in the American Free Press, we would get on, or I would get on a topic on Sweet Liberty, and she said right after that the American Free Press would be on it. She said it happened way too many times to be coincidence. And Eleanor called me from Canada, and you had said this too, that you noticed a lot of times Art Bell radio talk show host repeating you, almost quoting you, but yet, of course, never acknowledging the source. And Eleanor called one night, and heck, this was, I don't know, at least a couple years ago, I guess, or whatever, but she said, Jackie, you should tune in Art Bell. What he's doing right now is just an extension of what you and Alan just got done doing. So they've probably been listening, Alan.
Yeah. And also the other thing was, there's a shortwave broadcaster, too, who would often mention topics the next day.
What are you talking about? You can say names.
Before.
Who?
Well, an AJ.
What?
An AJ. An AJ.
Oh, Alex Jones. Why don't you just say Alex Jones?
Oh, that's his name. That's right, yeah.
First Amendment Radio.
Sure, I mean, I've no doubt to you. The giveaway is that there must be... Well, see, I know there are people out there who monitor all the airwaves, and I know this for a fact because there was a show on a Toronto station one day, a bit of news, and I really wanted to get a hold of the original copy, and I contacted the station, and they said they didn't have a copy to give me, but they put me in touch with an organization which does international monitoring of all the airwaves. And I wrote to them, and sure enough, they cost me $60 for a cassette tape, mind you. But this organization does monitor all radio shows and television shows in the entire country. And I thought, this has to be run by some government agency. So they do scan all the information that's been put out there. And I guess that way they can head off that information by putting out people with their own spin on it. You know, that's how they keep control of information. So when someone's coming out with some truth, they put out a superhero that then repeats it. And because God has said it, and with a spin on it, the people will listen to it, where the original person is forgotten in the wash. You know.
Well, you know, I'll tell you a good example of that. When there was a lot of, actually it was early on when we first started talking about chemtrails, and that would have been summer of 98, Alan, but we were really hitting it heavy at the time, and that was before you started, because you actually began coming on in the winter, December of 98, but it was within a year, or maybe even still that year, that it was ABC, one of the networks, one of the news networks had about, I've got it on video, they had a 3 or 4 minute thing on chemtrails, but of course they were calling them contrails, and they were even showing them what they looked like from the satellites, you know, all the haze, you know, the cirrus clouds and everything, and they showed X's in the sky, and they said, they said that these were from jets, from commercial jet airplanes, and that they were very concerned that this might be part of the cause of global warming.
Yeah, they said it was contrail clutter.
Yeah, they said it was contrails, yes.
Yeah, and they called it clutter, yeah.
Contrail clutter, yeah, contrails that didn't dissipate, right? And I wonder how many people who weren't aware of what a, quote, chemtrail is looked at that and said, wait a minute. That's not a contrail. Contrails don't last. Contrails dissipate almost as fast as the airplane leaves it.
Yeah. But everything's new in the New World Order. We have a New World Order, and we have a new freedom, and we have new contrails, you see. Everything's new.
Well, and new hurricane weather patterns.
That's right. And tornadoes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And yet every one of these things, this is the beauty of very high-tech manipulation. The beauty of it is that as long as they don't admit they're using very high sciences, even though they admit they have these abilities and installations to do so, as long as they don't admit they're actually using them, they can never, ever get to the absolute proof, except that what we see by our own reason. You know?
Yeah.
That's how it works.
And And you said...
But everything, yeah.
You were telling me, and I had written it down, except it's on another page here. When you had a visitor, one of our friends here from Pennsylvania, and you mentioned in the wintertime there, it happened last winter, and evidently this winter too, that after the snow melted, there was this white haze all over the ground. And he had it, he took a sample of it and had it analyzed. And what were the metals that they found in that thing, Alan? Barium?
There was barium, there was aluminum oxide, copper, titanium, and some other metallic substances. But this laboratory didn't have the facilities to do a biological check on it. But at least we've got all the metals there. But yeah, the whole field, once the last snow melts for a few days, you have maybe 4 or 5 inches of, it's like a tiny interwoven cobwebs. That's what it looks like. It's like a candy floss all over the field. And once the sun works in it for 4 or 5 days, then it crumbles into a powder, which lasts for quite a while. But that was the time of year when my dog died. Other people I know, their cats and dogs were getting sick as well, vomiting and so on. And I think it was from basically eating the snow.
Mm.
See, that's the last of the concentrated spraying for the whole winter. That's maybe 4 months, 5 months of snow.
Alan?
Spraying all in that snow, you see.
Alan?
Yeah.
Remember that Tessie died just prior to Maggie?
Yeah.
She had a sudden heart attack. She had no signs of any illness whatsoever. But when you mentioned eating snow, she'd go out there and she looked just like a machine. She'd put her put her mouth in the snow and just eat her way through it. And it never ever occurred to me till you just said that might have... Because Mariah would go out. Mariah didn't eat snow. She rolled in it. She rolls in it. But Tessie ate snow the minute she'd get out there.
Yeah, but then they licked their fur, they licked their paws.
And it was in February, right around the 1st of February. And Megan died, what, about a month later or before that? Within a couple of weeks.
That was March. Yeah, March.
Okay.
Yeah, March, yeah.
There you go. God, I had never thought about that,
you
Alan.
You literally have 4 months of spraying all condensed into that thin little layer, you see. That's a lot of chemicals. And that's what's left at the end is this polymer type sponge almost, and then it crumbles into a white powder, and even the leaves it rests upon turn pure white with it, you know. That's a lot of chemicals. That's what we're being doused with.
Yes, it is.
And this falls right along with the HARP technology, because in HARP, they mentioned many, many years ago that they could use HARP on a more sophisticated level if they could douse the atmosphere with metallic particles to cause it to be a good electrical conduit. But we're also taking this stuff in, we're breathing it in, we're eating it from the food, it's in the water, so we also are becoming walking antennas. And surely none of this can be a byproduct, a coincidence of it all.
We talked about some time ago, remember I told you about reading, about that, is it EDT? And the flyer I got on it, some type of an amino acid, I think. And the flyer, the brochure that I got on it, said that for years the FDA has acknowledged the EDT to cleanse the body of heavy metals. Toxins, heavy metals, but not, you know, how well it does with cleaning out the arteries. That's the point they were making. But at that point, I remember saying this, and I thought about it again when you were giving me that list of metals. We need to check out this EDT and see if it, I think it is EDT, see if it really will help to flush that from the body, Alan. Don't you think it's worth looking into?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I'm sure the elite themselves must have some very sophisticated method of ridding it from themselves. They must be doing it.
Yeah, because they're out and about, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that they do. Whatever the public have access to on a medical level is always antique, really. And they're always so far ahead that they're near the top. They must have very sophisticated methods of ridding this from their body.
Uh-huh.
And we know that they do get inoculations, the real inoculations against many of the hybrid designed bacteriums and viruses from germ warfare labs. They do get inoculations against all of these high diseases.
You
so
mean
they,
without
they
the...
would also get some sort of high chelation type therapy, yeah.
And that's what the EDT is chelation therapy. Oral chelation therapy.
Yeah. But it's a dangerous world we're living in. It's always been rather dangerous in the system, but just getting more overt now. We can see the effects. We can look at the skies and actually see this stuff coming down. One, I think it's last winter, when it's cold, the polymer, the stuff that causes the rainbow effect around the sun when the roots spraying heavily, you'll find the polymer when it's really cold weather sometimes comes down in clumps. And I saw one about the size was 6 feet long, tumbling through the sky slowly, and then it hit a tree and then gradually started to dissolve. And so that's what they used to call angel hair back in the 60s when they were experimenting with this stuff on the public. And of course the diversion the CIA put out was, oh, there's always UFOs in the vicinity when this stuff is coming down, this angel hair. But really they were testing it themselves on the public, and then no doubt they knew what the results would be by following the medical records of local areas.
You know, that what it sounds like to me is that ethyl dibromide. That's EDB. Mm-hmm. And remember I told you I had, that was in 98 when I received that email and said it's confirmed that there's EDB in the chemtrails. And this guy gave the phone number.
Yeah. So there's many substances. And again, I'd love to get a biological test done on this stuff to see if there's viruses. I know back in the 1950s when I think it was Hellier that created the H-bomb, he first suggested using this type of spray for electromagnetic pulse purposes, the heart purpose. And he also said that the polymer that they could mix it with could also be used to carry bacterium or viruses across vast areas in wartime. So I'd love to get a sample done on a biological level.
When I got the manufacturer safety data sheet on the ethyl dibromide, it did say that it freezes at about 50 degrees.
Oh, yeah.
And it dissipates in the sun. And
uh-huh.
When I called that lab, the gentleman, they put me in touch with the guy that actually did the analysis. And he said, I can't give you the results because somebody... a private individual had, you know, the sampling done, the analysis,
uh-huh.
But he said, I will tell you this one thing. There's no more than 10% EDB in this sample. And the FDA, around the 80s, I think, had put out an emergency stoppage on the use of EDB, ethyl dibromide. They were using it. They had used it for about a decade as pesticides. And I got a lot of information from Texas, the Texas Department of Environmental Protection, because they were the ones that really began to want to know what the safety of this stuff. And they were spraying it on dried corns and grains and things like that, wheat, and that, they were using it as a pesticide. And all the tests that had been done on it was the company that manufactured the EDB, and they kept saying it was safe. And so after a decade... then the EPA puts out emergency stopped usage. There is no safe level of ethyl dibromide. And according to this guy at the lab in Ohio that I spoke with, he said there was no more than 10% EDB in that sample that he analyzed.
Yeah.
And one of our listeners in, I believe it was Arkansas, called me just before I went on the air, the one day. That's when I was on at 6 p.m., and he said they've been spraying. And he said, Jackie, this stuff is hanging off the trees. And he grabbed a film canister and went out and got a sample of it. And he was holding it. I told him, you know, put a mask on and gloves. And he went out to get a sample, and he got back on the phone, and he was describing it to me. Like you said, it looked like, excuse me, it was lacy stuff, like angel hair. And while he was talking,
It's like that candy cane.
Yeah.
That stuff, yeah.
You're talking about cotton candy, Alan.
Cotton candy. In Britain, you call it candy floss, you know.
Okay. Well,
that's the stuff, yeah.
As he was watching it, it was dissipating. And
yeah.
So I suggested that he get it in the freezer right away, and he did. And it stopped, you know, it stopped melting, dissipating. And do you know that I don't really know what came of that? We were in touch off and on, and I don't know if he was able to find a lab that would do an analysis on it.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a very bad stuff. And that stuff you're describing is what he described, Alan.
Yeah, I know. What's just happening all over the country.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is all kept quiet by the regular media, and anyone who can trust the regular media when this is happening above your heads every day, I mean, why would you expect any truth from them? And to be honest, I think this is the number one crisis we have to face at the moment. This secrecy around what's happening above our heads is terribly ominous. They know it's detrimental to our health. They know they can't tell the public what it is or why they're doing it. And yet it's a priority, obviously, for doing so. I think this is the number one thing that we have to really get out into the open, because until this stops, I don't think people are going to survive too long with all the infections they're getting. It's probably affecting their mind as well. We know that Alzheimer's patients have large quantities of aluminum oxide in their brain tissue.
Is it? It's aluminum oxide or aluminum?
It's aluminum. All types and traces of aluminum are detrimental in the brain, and unfortunately, that's where it seems to be taken up to, and it gets deposited. So it could certainly affect memory, for instance. I think it's also possible there's drugs in this stuff, since Rumsfeld came on after 9/11 and said that they had vast quantities of aerosolized Prozac and Valium to spray over entire cities if there's another crisis in order to calm the people. It makes perfect sense as we go through these big changes, what they go through, and they are of a global change, basically,
yeah.
The changes what they go through. It makes perfect sense they'd want to drug the populace as we go through them and bring us out into a completely new way of living. So I wouldn't put anything past them.
That stuff I was talking about isn't EDT, it's EDTA. And I was thinking that maybe one of our wonderful internet listeners might have time to do some real research on that. To find out about it. We're going to be doing a break here in about 15 seconds, and then we'll be back after this. Folks, don't go away.
If you'd like to get a copy of this program, there are a few ways that we can help you. You may subscribe at FirstAmendmentRadio.com for only $45 a month, and you'll receive an MP3 CD weekly of all of our programs. As a bonus, we'll send you a password for our audio archives online. That's a $15 value. Or you may request any month of any program on one MP3 CD for a minimum donation of only $25, or any single program on tape, MP3 CD, or CD for only $15. You may do all of this online at FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Just follow the instructions to make a donation or subscribe. You may also adopt an hour of your favorite program Please don't forget that most of the programs on FirstAmendmentRadio.com are listener-supported. Don't do Internet? Then call 559-781-3773 and we'll be honored to help you. Thank you from all of us here at FirstAmendmentRadio.com.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar.
Government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you?
Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen. There's a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188. Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite.
Okay, we're back. I found that that pamphlet, Alan. Are you there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I did this before, but it's just one paragraph, and I want to read this for our listeners. Maybe somebody will check into this and get back with me. They're talking about this chelation therapy, of course, for the arteries, because it removes the calcium plaque. But it says, in the days after World War II, men who worked in battery factories or painted ships with lead-based paint began coming down with lead poisoning from their high exposure in these jobs. A safe, harmless chemical called EDTA was found to be extremely effective for removing the lead from the men's bodies, an effective cure for lead poisoning. But something else happened to many of the men who were treated with EDTA. They enjoyed an apparent reduction in symptoms of heart disease. And they explain, this is ethylene diamine tetraacetic acid. It's an amino acid. It says it was synthesized in Germany in 1935 and first patented in the U.S. in 1941. And so I don't know why I haven't taken the time to do this, and I haven't. I guess I was hoping one of our listeners would do it. Anyway, that's what it is, EDTA. And it's either oral or they do it by injection, too. But I guess the injection is very, very expensive. And the oral chelation therapy, taking it orally, is a lot less expensive. So, I just wanted that. And Darren asked me, remember we were talking earlier today about that Dr. Doom?
Oh, yeah.
Dr. Eric Pianca is his name. And he was doing a talk. This was in March. Darren said he talked about this on the air yesterday, last night.
Uh-huh.
And the guy, this was the 5th of March that he did this speech, when he said that 90% of the population had to be eliminated. And he said that airborne Ebola would be the best way to do it. But Darren wanted me to clean up something, because on this guy's website there was a very extensive, what do you call it when somebody dies? not a biography, but his...
Obituary.
Huh?
Obituary. Obituary.
Yeah, the obituary. Well, he had evidently written it himself, but at the top of it, it says, not dead yet. So this was a long background on this man and all that he's done and accomplished. He's got a herd of bulls, or cows, and his main bull's name is Lucifer Allen. But Darren wanted me to clean that up and let the listeners know that, because he thought because he was looking at that obituary, the guy was dead. He's not. He did that on the 5th of March, and he's recommending airborne Ebola.
What, was he speaking at some meeting or?
Yeah, it was the it was in Texas, Beaumont, Texas, at Lamar University, and it was the Texas Academy of Science. And the guy who has exposed him was a member of the, according to his name is Mims, Forrest Mims, and he said that he was an associated or a member of the Texas Academy of Science. And in their ecology department or something. And he said the thing that really perked him up was just before this Pianca came up to the mic, somebody went over to the guy that was videotaping all the speakers, and they had evidently a fairly heated conversation. And the guy that had the video camera, I guess he, you know, pointed it up in the air and walked away in a huff. Because they didn't videotape this speech. But the guy, anyway, that reported on it, now, we don't know if this whole thing is a hoax, but, I mean, there is a website on this guy. This and you know, for these accusations to be made and not be true, the guy that made them could probably get himself in a real jam.
Yeah.
Because he wrote it. Airborne Ebola.
Yeah, well, they don't even need this guy because, I mean, the big boys have published enough on it themselves. You know, they've published this over and over and over about vastly reducing the population of the world to a more suitable size for their new humanity. So it doesn't really matter about what this guy... Jacques Cousteau said the same thing himself, you know.
Well, I guess it's because it's so recent.
Yeah, it'd be worthwhile if someone could check it and verify this did happen at this place in Texas.
And allegedly the guy got a standing ovation. When he was done.
Well, actually, what the signs and symptoms of the Spanish flu that happened in World War I are very similar to Ebola. In some respects, because towards the end they did hemorrhage from the eyes and so on. So, which makes you think that probably the Ebola was the Spanish flu was a hybrid itself, a specially made one. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Now, I've read different accounts of this, but I've read accounts that they said at least 50 million people died of the Spanish flu.
Yeah. They do say that it killed more than all the participants who died in the world in that First World War.
Yeah. But 50 million isn't enough for them, is it, Alan?
No, they have their ideal society all figured out by statistics and so on. And they don't need all the people they have today in a post-industrial and post-technological society. They don't need it all, the useless eaters, basically.
Right.
And that's how the elites see the people. They see the people down below as being there to serve their needs. But when they no longer need those people, they have no qualms in getting rid of them. And this has been in the works for an awful long time. I don't know if you ever saw the movie Metropolis. The old movie. It was an old silent movie, in fact. About the creation of new types of robots or cyborgs take over the labor, and in there the scientist who creates them says that we no longer need the workers. They're now redundant, they're obsolete, and that's basically how they see society today. We're obsolete. They no longer need us.
Okay.
They have China to supply all the needs for the elite for centuries to come.
I remember reading about a very plush getaway that they've created in China for the elite. I guess Kissinger, Henry Kissinger, spends a lot of time there. It's a whole complex for them with all the comforts, you know, that the elite expect and want with their entertainment and their fine dining and places to stay and stuff like that in China.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, these guys are internationalists, you see. Even though they rule countries or have helped rule or create the destinies of countries, they themselves have always been international. And so they don't care which country they make their base for any particular generation. So they have no problems in moving to China or wherever.
Right.
Wherever else is needed, yeah.
Probably some very beautiful...
They have no affinity to the people, you see.
Well, as you pointed out a long time ago, none of the rulers of any of the countries, well, maybe England, I don't know, but they weren't the same nationality as the people they were ruling.
That's right. I mean, the Normans came into England in the 11th century, and they've interbred amongst themselves ever since, and with their relatives in other European countries, but they've never interbred with the ordinary people.
Uh-huh.
So they've never seen themselves really as belonging to those people to whom they rule over. And that's no different from the Kissinger types who came in from Germany. Oh, he was already an internationalist in the elite category in his ideology. And they're all the same at the top, really. And the hope of all the workers beneath them who help them, the lower members of the CFR, etc., is to one day to get accepted to be up amongst this international elite. Most of them have got a fat chance of getting there, mind you, but they'll grovel and do what they're told in the hope that they may also get up there. But the guys towards the top, in fact, they have hardly any empathy or affinity to humankind in general, let's be honest about it. And Mr. Kissinger, when he was in office with Nixon, put through that bill that declared that the greatest enemy to the state was overpopulation. And then they put that massive funding towards ways of vastly reducing the populations by all means possible. So that's the kind of characters we're dealing with here.
Yes.
And now these guys are in power. They belong to the top associations in the world. They have the power to implement what they want. They tell us what they want. We better take them seriously when they say these things. They mean it.
So you know, when
they're
you
not
read about
a wish list.
10 years ago, reading about it, I didn't disbelieve it, but it's beyond the realm of your comprehension to really get it. And then when you see what is happening today, we realize we're living in it. We're
That's
living
right
inside.
The average person, the average person, you see, we only make excuses for them. We actually make excuses. But we cannot believe that they mean what they say, because I wouldn't do that and you wouldn't do that, so therefore they wouldn't do that. That's how we think, you see. But we're dealing with different creatures here. They're psychopathic in nature. They're interbred with long lineages of psychopaths, and they have no empathy for the public. They believe in audacity. That's the whole terminology of knighthood, which they all belong to these knightly Masonic associations. A knight is bold and audacious. He does things which are outside the norms of normal morality or rules. They break all the rules.
A knight
and
is
that's
bold.
Also that's the definition of a psychopath as well. They break all the social norms and don't fret about it, you know. Yeah. Hello?
I'm here, I'm listening, and I'm thinking.
Yeah.
I not to change our subject on us.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered, I had received that email, and this wasn't an email saying you're so full of it or, you know, you're going to go to hell or like that, but this email is from a guy who's been at the website. I don't know if he's listened. I don't know if he's listened to any of the broadcasts yet, but I did email him today and encouraged him, you know, to tune in and listen. And one of his questions, and I know that you've said this before, but it doesn't hurt to repeat some of these things. He was asking about revelations. And he says, if revelations has already come to pass, well, what has Jesus got in store for us? And I wonder if you would share with our listeners once again what you mentioned about revelations and comment on that question.
Well, revelations is a... I mean, I generally never get sidetracked by the ones who do this deliberately to sidetrack you.
But I don't know. I don't.
They are out there, you know.
I don't think he was,
you know,
though.
But I think he may have been, because I think the website, our website, got the same message. But revelations has many meanings on different levels, and it takes too long to explain them all. It's a mystic... Gnostic interpretation. It's a brotherhood interpretation. That's why it's written in mystical language. But Armageddon happened about AD 70 or 72 when the Romans took the last castle on the mountain. And of course that was in the over the plains of Megiddo. The mountain in Hebrew is called Har, so it's Har Megiddo, Armageddon. That's what that meant. That's what it was all written about at that time.
Oh.
But the rest of it, yeah. And so they can always resuscitate it and bring it back to life, because you can use revelations over and over for any generation if you make the sequences happen and the right events happen. And, of course, on a higher level, it's all the zodiacal time cycle. And the people who want to understand the zodiac should get the third book of Cutting Through, because I go through into the esoteric interpretations of revelations, which has nothing to do with what people think it has. The exoteric is simply taught to obedient Christians so that they'll think that everything is inevitable and that it's God's will. This is one of the oldest tricks in the book, is to make you think, well, it's preordained, there's nothing you can do about it. And in fact, if you try and stop it, you're fighting God himself.
Yes. Yeah.
That's the greatest form of psychological warfare ever devised, and that technique is ancient. That's why they used to use the oracles. The priesthoods ran the oracles at Delphi and other places. And when the oracle spoke, then you better do what you're told, because if not, you are going against the God's will. So it's all preordained, and they love to teach you everything's preordained, you can't change anything.
Right.
What a beautiful weapon against the public, not to try to change things.
In your book
Accept
one,
your destiny.
In your book
yeah.
one, did you talk about the international priesthood?
I talked how ancient it was and
okay.
how it'd always been here. Yeah.
Well,
and
I
know that it didn't. I know that they didn't just dream up this system beginning with Sumer about 5,000 or 6,000 B.C.
Right.
These techniques came from much earlier times. There's been many, many civilizations prior to that.
And if they have been in control, as it appears they have, you know, after you told us about that, the international priesthood, things that I've read, so many things that I've read, of ancient history, they mention the priesthood, but they just mention it in passing. And these are things that I had read before, that once I reread them, that's what jumps out at me. The priesthood is always mentioned, Alan, and the priesthood was all powerful, as you said.
Always.
They were the ones ruling the kings, ruling the pharaohs.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have had that control, as it certainly appears to me now that they have all through down through the ages, they're the ones that were in control of the writing, the divine word of God, you know, the Bible.
The legal system.
Yeah,
we know in Sumer they had so many different specialized priesthoods. Today we'd call them basically categories of bureaucrats, really, because they had lawyer priesthoods that dealt with real estate and land. The other ones dealt with the trading that went in and out of Sumer. They had a priesthood for everything you can imagine, specializing in a different areas. And they also were responsible for mating up kings and queens, so they were into eugenics back then, too. The priesthoods were always in charge. They also decided who the pharaohs would see as ambassadors and who wouldn't get in to see the pharaoh. So they had tremendous power. There was one pharaoh in Egypt who realized that he was almost a bird in a gilded cage. And he caught on to the fact that certain envoys were being turned away by the priests and they never got to see them. And he found out by yelling to some of them out of his window. And one day he jumped out the window trying to get away. And he was caught and brought back by the priests.
Who was that?
Oh, I've got his name somewhere tucked away in my computer brain somewhere.
You told us once.
That,
about the one pharaoh who at Tutankhamun that he actually got rid of the priesthood and was teaching the one God or creator, and then after he died they just like he never existed.
Not really. Akhenaten, there was much more to the Akhenaten story than Aten is part of the sun god worship, or the symbology of what's behind the sun, the light, and all that masonry. And that's why you find places like Manhattan, you know, is named after him in a nice esoteric way. It's all through high masonry, Aten. And that's where the word atone comes from, atonement, etc. But it was really an elitist religion, this God is one idea. And it's also, it's a truth behind all the religions, even in Brahma, that all the faces of God is just a face of the one deity. That's what it really means. And it's the same with the Egyptian pantheon. They're all aspects of the same deity. Now, that had always been taught esoterically to the priests, whereas in Akhenaten today they came out openly. However, it was only for the nobility who could get the life of Aten. It wasn't for the ordinary people. It was still an elitist group. Yeah. So it's each one is a long story, but interesting. Yeah.
Well, I can remember us talking about this. I think it's on that first series. That when you were on for 5 weeks at a time, all at one time,
yeah.
And you mentioned Akhenaten in a favorable way. You said that, you know, even when he had his statues or whatever, that he didn't have himself all puffed up. He was kind of pot-bellied and
yeah, big hips. Yeah.
Yeah. But you mentioned
him. But bigger hips than his wife.
Huh?
Yeah, he had bigger hips than his wife, yeah. But the one thing about Akhenaten was when the invasion of Egypt was underway, he ignored all of the warnings that were coming from the outlying areas which Egypt had looked after or was part of their empire, and he allowed the invasion to occur in Egypt, and no one's ever explained why he allowed this. He didn't go out to fight them.
Who were invading?
The armies out to fight them.
Who were the invaders?
It was you had these Hyksos people and the Habirus coming in, and they'd already taken some of the outlying areas, and they were sending urgent messages to his new capital, And those Armarna tablets have all been unearthed with these messages contained there, urgent pleas. But he didn't lift a finger to stop it, which makes no sense unless you realize that he probably and some of the other elite were moving on after this, because it made no sense that he didn't try to defend Egypt.
Uh-huh.
I think, in other words, it was a setup. It was time for the elite to move on.
And this priesthood, wasn't it the Isle of Crete, you said, that there was evidence that they sat there, the probability or possibility, and wrote all the religions for...
Yeah, they've unearthed these huge monastic libraries there, where they had the religions of all the peoples of the mainlands. And it seemed to be a central hub where these missionaries went out and were basically updating each different variety's religion for them, you might say, like a central command in charge of all the various peoples and the various religions.
I think maybe,
and that does make sense to me.
Yeah, one of the important things, if we could get it, is that religions were made by man.
Oh, yeah.
All religions, including Christianity. There's nowhere in the Bible. And, of course, we know there's 50-some versions of the Bible, but even in the one King James that so many people believe is the Word of God, there's no place in there where Jesus said he was coming here to start a religion. He said he was coming to bear witness unto the truth. At least, you know, that's what they attribute that his words. To Jesus. He was,
and that's the best you could do in this world, because you won't get much further than trying to get the truth out.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
And it
so
seems
those
like
who control religions will take over.
Right, so many people seem to miss that. He said, I came here for one reason into this world, and that is to bear witness unto the truth. And it's almost like you could see back then the same thing that's going on today, and here's an individual who is trying to help the people to break their prison chains from their minds, from what was going on at that time.
Yeah, and then the establishment takes it over and uses the truth to imprison the people.
Yeah.
That's always been the way. It's always been the way. It's no different today. You say the truth. Many small people say the truth, and once enough are saying it, then they get you a superstar to take all those truths you're saying, to get to the top, get well known, and then start spinning the truth off.
Record budget deficits, bankruptcies galore, and the U.S. dollar is at an all-time low. With today's gloomy economic outlook, safe investments are often hard to find. For over a decade, Melody Cederstrom at Discount Gold and Silver Trading Company has been helping people secure their future by investing in the precious metals. Melody has the honesty, integrity, and experience that is often lacking in the precious metals business. Let her put it to work for you. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188.
You were both in Skull and Bones, the secret society.
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
It's so secret we can't talk about it.
What does that mean for America?
I've got a vision for what I want to do for the country. See, I know exactly where I want to live.